to Drive Through HR. Happy Tuesday. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking about HR with the folks getting it done around the world. So can't wait to get to our guest. Our first dialing in from Australia guest. So the sun technically never sets anywhere on Drive Through HR. So there you go. So, Dominic Toledo, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
So, if you would, we'll kick it off and just have you kind of introduce yourself to our millions of listeners around the world, and then we'll kind of roll into what's top of mind for you after that.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Dominic Toledo. I'm the Senior Vice President of Global Sales for PageUp People, and obviously delighted to be on the show. And for those of you who are familiar with PageUp, we started our life about 15 years ago in Australia as a custom software development house. Australia obviously still remains our headquarters today, but I'm glad to say that we've grown globally, particularly over the past 10 years, and are now in the unified talent management space, providing a software solution to global Fortune 500 companies, particularly companies that have both operations in developed and emerging and high growth markets.
Dominic, because of your position, you get to listen to a lot of people's problems. In sales, you get to kind of hear that front end. I have trouble with this. This isn't working for us. We really have this objective, et cetera. What do you see when you talk to folks? Like, what do you see thematically in 2013? What do you think is keeping HR up at night right now?
Well, we're in a unique position in the talent management space, in part through our geography. And a lot of our clients have been partnering with us to try and address the needs of talent management, particularly in the emerging and high-growth markets. So they might be domiciled in the traditional developed markets of North America or Europe, but they're getting all their growth in these emerging markets. And fundamentally, the journey we've been on is to try and understand the nuances of doing talent in those markets and why it's important to offer solutions that can address global as well as the local requirements on behalf of those clients. And that a lot of what we do and keeps us awake at night evolves around being able to help our clients execute in the markets where they're growing most rapidly.
What's different? I think the audience would wonder, when someone's setting up an office in China or anywhere else that's kind of a high-growth market, what's different about talent management in those markets than the developed world, if you will?
Yeah, at a macro level, I think there's three fundamental characteristics of those high-growth markets and or emerging markets. And the first one is always cultural differences. Whether it's East versus West, but probably more importantly, the ability to understand how to transfer global best practice into markets that have their own cultural characteristics. The second pillar that we see is, particularly in the SaaS space, is internet accessibility. So the ability to deliver SaaS solutions within environments that may not have the same level of internet robustness or reliability. And thirdly, a lot of our clients spend enormous amounts of time ensuring good governance, whether it be around legal jurisdictions, even operating within political stability or different types of corruption indices. When we look at the sum total of cultural internet accessibility and governance, a lot of what we do evolves around making sure that we can hit the sweet spot with regard to those pillars.
What's the importance, and you said cultural differences, and I think language is a part of that, but what's the importance in terms of someone in a different country saying that the language of the software is written towards them, or how important, I guess, is language as it relates back to talent management?
Well, it's very important, and I guess the first characteristic at a functional level would be adoption through simplicity. So systems that we've designed to work well in developed markets, such as North America, won't necessarily be adopted in emerging markets as they're too complicated. Often you do not have dedicated HR practitioners using their systems, but generalists or part-timers. So for starters, the system has to be simple and easy to adopt. And when we talk about cultural differences beyond language, they tend to engender themselves through the need for local workflows well beyond language support. So intuitive interfaces that can be configured quite easily. And then finally, local differences as they pertain to the kind of information you want to capture. So in China, for example, recruitment criteria can extend to often extends to asking questions about your gender and how old you are, which in Western countries may not be prevalent. And so there are a lot of different ways in viewing the lens of how people expect to apply for a job in those markets.
In terms of buzzwords that we all know are kind of out there and prevalent, big data, mobile and social and cloud, et cetera, if you can separate kind of the hype from what really people are kind of struggling with and what they buy, like, because you get to see things, in a much different way than most people, I think, that are listening to the call. So, like, separate the hype for us. Like, well, the words and the concepts that really that have traction for you.
Yeah, so I love mobile. And everything we do is on a mobile-first development philosophy at PagerPeople, because that's where the market's going. That's where the market is. And a lot of these, a lot of countries are leapfrogging, the traditional desktop facility and going straight to mobile. So that's exciting. And whilst we see mobile growing rapidly, especially in some of these high-growth markets, the reality is that we still have about 80% of traffic coming from desktop to our various career sites or to our various applications. So even with the rapid growth of mobile, there's still a lot of headway in terms of adoption overall. In countries such as India, we've got about 40% of traffic coming via mobile. So you can see that very soon that's going to start exceeding desktop traffic. So depending on the geographical location, mobile adoption will be higher, and people will go straight to phones and tablets versus traditional desktop. Part of that is what we're seeing, particularly in countries like India, where smartphones are being enabled at a price where people can afford to buy them, and they're a credible alternative to PCs. So I think mobile is obviously not just here to stay, but it's fundamentally changing the way that we use applications. And even in the United States, we know that mobile devices will overtake desktop and laptop computers as a preferred method for accessing the internet, by 2015. So certainly my sense is that it is going mainstream, and we need to take account of it. Funnily enough, when you get onto the career sites of Fortune 500 companies, one of the key measures that we use is that can these sites be viewed on a mobile device? And what we find is only about a third of Fortune 500 career sites have mobile viewing capability. So that might be an indicator in terms of an opportunity for people that are looking to attract talent.
Hey, Dominic. Kind of stay in the same kind of mobile lane here. Where are you having to just stop your clients from trying to force mobile into their strategy?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, because I think in some markets we're seeing good uptake of new mobile functionality such as QR codes for jobs. But to your point, you can take that too far, and not everyone is going to be into mobile apply. And so the ability for us to cater to audiences, particularly if you look at the various demographics inside the global talent pool, aging populations still have a preference for adult concepts that steer away from mobile. And so you may need to make it very, very easy to apply, whether that be through submitting a traditional resume and or even auto-populating through some kind of a profile that you've created on a site. And so we caution our clients about having I guess having options and being really easy to engage with from a candidate perspective. The mobile first development philosophy from our perspective is really about focusing on the most important part of the user experience first. And so we're hoping that through that philosophy, it'll kind of translate into being usable for everyone.
You know, in terms of meeting, you know, both your customers and prospects and candidates where they are, how do you gauge? Because like when you were talking about emerging markets, of course, I'm thinking about some markets, they're going to be so far advanced on mobile that if you don't offer a solution there, you're already dead on arrival. And I can see some developing countries where they're not on mobile and they probably won't be in a sophisticated way on mobile for the next decade. So how do you figure out where they are? And do you think it's our responsibility to meet our customers and prospects where they are or kind of lead them to where they're coming next?
Well, I think that's a really good point. And part of the reason that we've grown so rapidly is that our software is getting pulled into markets where our clients are doing business. So we've always been very, very responsive to understanding what are the particular characteristics of those markets and what means success for our clients in those markets. And, you know, I think there's an element about having to lead, but then there's also an element about having to really listen and understand what's going on in that space. And, you know, to the point around mobile, you know, a lot of people associate mobile with smartphones. You know, you've got one, I've got one. But the reality is that in South Africa, where a lot of our global mining and refining clients operate, the most populous phone is the Nokia 3210. I don't know, William, whether you still remember the Nokia 3210.
I do.
It's a great phone, and it still works, right? And the reality is that a lot of blue-collar workers within that particular geographic sphere applying to mining and refining jobs will tend to use SMS. So we've created the ability to apply for jobs and fill out application forms through an SMS facility to cater to a cohort that has simply that 3210 capability. And so if we had gone in there with a smartphone, we would have kind of missed the point. So it's very, very important to take the developing principles within your R&D pipeline, but then really listen to where the commercial application of that is.
I get asked this question all the time: SaaS versus client server. What do you think the market is right now? If you were to break that up in percentages of the world that we care about, X percent is SaaS, X percent is client server. And is there any industries where SaaS doesn't really work yet?
We've been SaaS and we've been in the cloud since our inception. So we were cloud providers before it was really called the cloud. So true multi-tenant SaaS. I guess our philosophy is that that allows us to be truly global within our virtual networks in terms of scaling up and down rapidly and you know, being able to deliver to customers in market on point. I think the traditional on-premise structure obviously has a lot of infrastructure built around it, and I think there is a gradual migration pattern towards being in the cloud, and that could also be segmented on the basis of what type of information you're prepared to host. You know, I think even 10 years ago in markets such as Australia, you know, the idea of a service provider hosting candidate information, you know, was quite an abstract notion. And today it's everywhere. So I think with the element or the advent of lower or better price performance and lower costs of entry from a SaaS perspective, we're going to continue to see migration. I think there are still some big on-premise applications in financial services, you know, where there's a lot of proprietary data and where there's a lot of legacy. I think industries such as mining, refining, oil and gas, which are constantly entering new markets and want to effectively negate the cost impact of having to put another box down every time you set up an operation in a remote market, they're really going to be looking at SaaS as their key driver. My general sense is that these things go in cycles. But the mainstream adoption of cloud and SaaS as a protagonist for that is definitely here to stay.
The products versus process, yet another question I get asked a lot. Where does a client typically start? If they've got, let's say, their processes aren't developed yet, and it could be in succession or performance or, you know, applicant tracking, et cetera, whatever, wherever we're pointing the gun. But let's say they have a less defined process. Can we lay great products on top of a terrible process and it work? Or how do we help our practitioners with process versus products?
Yeah, a lot of our products are built to be very intuitive and have what we define as being a best practice or base practice process and workflow embedded in the tool. So for some of our clients who don't have necessarily the maturity around their HR processes, there we can spin up an instance that has an existing workflow that will cater to 80% of clients and fulfill the basic functionality around the unified talent management suite or the employee lifecycle. So whether it be at the acquisition stage or whether it be post-acquisition, looking at performance, development, succession, career pathing. And so there's a lot to be said for having that simplicity and that pre-configured workflow within your instance. I think there is some truth to the fact that having great software is only partially successful if you don't have a great process. So I think we can help clients with that process, and we do that through a very consultative approach. We do that through change management. We do that by sending in people who can help map where the organization is. I think the biggest challenge that we solve on behalf of some of our clients that use this type of talent management software is that they often don't take the software with them when their process changes, as opposed to they don't have a process. And we see that all the time, particularly markets that are invariably changing very rapidly in the current macroeconomic environment. And let's face it, markets have irreversibly changed. Business models will never be the same again, and fundamentally we're questioning the very premise upon which we compete in these global markets. And so ensuring that you've got really robust, auditable software that's being monitored by your partner, whether it's a vendor or other partner, to make sure that you're taking the software with you when you're changing your business process. That's where we see the big opportunity.
Well, let me do a quick reset. Everybody listening to Drive Through HR, Brian Williams on with Dominic Toledo from Sydney, Australia, and talking a lot about mobile and talent mobility. So, of course, recruiting top talent, always on the minds of company leaders, and so is employee engagement. So exactly kind of where do you see innovations around, employee engagement? Once you've got the top talent recruited, how are you going to keep them?
Yeah, I mean, employee engagement is huge. You know, and we're a full talent visionary. So in terms of the completeness of our vision around our offering and the way we partner with clients, we look at the whole cycle. I continue to read, even the most recent Gallup poll indicated that, you know, something in the order of 70% of U.S. workers are disengaged. So, there's obviously a significant human cost that is associated with that. And I guess at the core, employee engagement has always been about creating a connection between the employee and the organization. And so we're seeing organizations leverage social collaboration tools much more effectively these days to achieve this and give people a voice. Internally at Page of People, we use Yammer. Whether it's that or any other type of social collaboration tool, the idea is to enhance the flow of communication, kind of remove hierarchy, particularly in large complex enterprises, and give employees an opportunity to understand, you know, what's happening within the organization they're working in. Some of the other things that we're seeing that are impactful are seeing organizations moving away from lengthy employee surveys and conducting more dynamic, quick pulse checks and regular monitoring of engagement of their workforce. Some really innovative clients in this area are actually encouraging employees to respond to just a single question every day, right? And this question can be, you know, put on the internet or on your mobile device, or it can be sent to you, and it allows them to monitor employee morale or engagement in real time around a very specific topic that might be prevalent within the organization. So there's some really cool stuff that's going on in employee engagement, and we're going to have to continually work on this because, you know, a lot of the macro stats seem to indicate that there's opportunities around engaging more.
Dominic, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you, you know, doing business in Australia, the buyer in Australia, the HR practitioner in Australia, you've also done a ton of business here in the U.S. What's some of the similarities between us and some of the dissimilarities that you see?
Well, I think we're divided by the same language, for starters. So when we look at the and you know, the Australia and America have a very deep relationship, and we have more in common than sets us apart. And you know, it's a really healthy relationship because we can learn, particularly from the innovation in the North American market, and equally because of Australia's geographic advantage and proximity to Asia. You know, we're delivering a lot of solution technology into those markets that's very disruptive to the North American marketplace. You know, so it's really about leveraging the respective strengths of those markets. In terms of the differences in doing business, you know, when I look at the decision-making processes within organizations, the biggest variability is around the role that HR plays in making some of these decisions, you know, around how they're going to invest in their workforce. And, you know, fundamentally, you know, talent arguably, and this might be considered somewhat controversial in some quarters, but, you know, there's a whole movement around saying that talent is just too important to be left to HR alone. You know, we need to get other people involved in managing talent, our most precious resource within the organization. And so we're starting to see a little bit of a shift towards different stakeholder groups and functions within the organization getting involved. And because we're dealing with effectively the enablement through HR software, i.e. a technology sale, you know, obviously the IT side of the house becomes a very important stakeholder as well. And because of the tightening in trading conditions economically over the past couple of years, you know, the business case needs to resonate with the CFO. So, you know, when you're really looking at it, we're moving towards a much more need for a much more consultative approach, a much more complex approach to marrying up the various stakeholder needs. That's probably a similarity I see around both markets. And I guess the other similarity then is, you know, we're still seeing a lot of innovation in the talent acquisition space, and which is fantastic. But I guess the maturity of those markets also is starting up a much broader conversation around the employee lifecycle beyond acquisition. You know, and I think that's where the big opportunity is, to make sure that organizations are taking a lens that is the full life cycle once we've invested the dollars to acquire the best talent.
Nice. You know, Brian mentioned talent mobility a second ago, and I wanted to get your take on how should we do talent mobility? I mean, like, what's best case scenario? How should we approach talent mobility?
Well, I think talent mobility, I mean, it's one of my pet subjects. And, you know, talent mobility to me is being solved today through the advantages of big data, which really ultimately drives much better decisions. So understanding or using the data that you're sitting on as an organization to understand where your top talent comes from, where it goes to, and really starting to think about how we can much more rapidly deploy talent to where it's most needed within the organization. Talent shortages are here to stay. You know, we will always have talent shortages, particularly around that scarce, skilled knowledge worker set, regardless of the industry. That's a horizontal application. And so whether it's a salesperson moving on every 2 years and the need to get proactive about retention strategies by having that data flagged, or market mapping talent across your organization to divert it to the projects that are coming online. We're working with our clients from a big data perspective to get smart about how we manage those decisions. And so within some of our clients, and we do this through career pathing effectively and driving self-service career pathing decisions within organizations. But, you know, for from the recruiter's perspective for a particular role, you know, what is the best place to get the person? How long will it take us? How much will we need to pay for them? Which sources correlate best with performance within these particular roles within our organizations? So we can even make decisions for very hard-to-fill roles, which may take the recruiter down a path of exploring temporary contractors if we know through the data that it could take us a long time to recruit. So using big data then on the flip side to aggregate career paths is probably another great way of getting decision frameworks into the organization. And so fundamentally, from our perspective, talent mobility will evolve around the use of big data to measure the effectiveness in which you can identify your bench strength and where it needs to be deployed.
You know, from a as a follow-up to the metrics part, what's two or three things that all great HR leaders should have a feel for the numbers? Like, what are if you could take all of HR data, all of big data, HR, all of HR data, all of the HR metrics, standards, metrics, analytics, etc. What's the three or four things that they should always kind of have a feel for?
That's a great question, and I think our lens around this has been that, you know, you should absolutely at any given point of time have a pulse check of the health of your organization. So, you know, understanding what the mood of your organization is at any given point in time, to certainly from our perspective, is important. You really want to be understanding your data as it aligns to execution of corporate strategy. So moving beyond operational HR data and really aligning that to how well does performance in a wider group correlate to our organizational corporate strategy. And so some of the ways that we do that is by measuring the effectiveness of goal alignment within organizations, the effectiveness of particular investments people are making in development tasks that are specific to an organization. And then I think, finally, it's probably that the data outside of your organization, you know, and that is that, you know, where is the market moving in terms of availability of the most critical skill sets that you're going to need to future-proof your organization? And so understanding, again, how to align the corporate strategy 3 to 5 years from now, you know, if we need to execute against a particular set of objectives, you know, are we prepared to do that? You know, do we have the skills inside our company today? And if not, where are they going to come from? And particularly if you're moving into new markets, we find that that's really the crux of the metrics that HR professionals are starting to now to have to get their head around.
Well, that's perfect. We've got about a minute and 30 seconds left. So, there we go. So where can folks connect with you in the future, and are there any conferences in the next month or two you're going to be at that people might be able to track you down?
Well, the good news is that I'm on a plane all the time. So inevitably at some point we will see one another. I am speaking at the iRecruit conference in Amsterdam in June. That's for those of you who may or may not be aware of that particular conference, that is taking place on the 20th and 21st of June in Amsterdam, iRecruit. I'll be speaking at that particular conference. Later in the year, we'll be also presenting at HR Technology in Las Vegas, stateside, so really looking forward to that. Very, very excited about what we're doing there this year. We'll also be at HR Technology back in Amsterdam late in October, back in Europe. There's a number of exciting conferences also in Australia. We're currently participating in the Australasian Talent Conference in Sydney. That's taking place today, tomorrow, and Thursday. You probably know Kevin Wheeler, a good friend of our firm, will be speaking at that conference about the Fearless Forecast for 2014. That's just some of the things that we're doing. We've got a bunch of conferences in Singapore and then a bunch of great stuff that we're doing in the United States as well.
Well, that is fantastic. We'll definitely see you at HR Tech in Vegas for sure. Dominic, thank you so much for coming on with us. And, folks, we are out of here for today.